Because really, lies come from, not from God, right? They come from the enemy, and so therefore, it is never right to lie, even if it has a good end. And say, well, then these guys would have arrested David. Really? And God couldn't preserve him? God couldn't protect him? God can protect him. We don't need to lie to protect anybody. You don't need to lie or anything like that, you know, because God can take care of it. And so we get into Acts chapter 24, and this is relevant because the question I would throw out to you is it ever right to do something wrong, even if it leads to good consequences? You know, is it ever right to do something wrong if you know it'll turn out right, it'll turn out good? And the answer is no, and the Apostle Paul knew that. Because the ends do not justify the means. This is called situational ethics. And it probably leads to lots of good debates, but not this morning. This is really what Paul and his friends were faced with as they came into Caesarea and stood before a man named Felix. And we'll get into that towards the end of the chapter. We're going to cover the entire chapter today. The outline is really simple. You have the accusation, you have the defense, and you have the verdict. It's a trial. We just want to look at it real quick and see what the Lord has for us. But I think the other thing that we glean from this chapter is two things. One, that it's never right to do the wrong thing, even if it may turn out good. Right? The other thing we glean from this is a missed opportunity that Felix had. Felix had an amazing opportunity to hear the gospel from the Apostle Paul. More than once, he called him in several times and to discuss things with him. And in the end, Felix turns away. Felix does not want to, and he rejects Christ. He rejects the Messiah. And so we see this huge missed opportunity by Felix. So let's just read the chapter, get our minds back geared to what's going on, and just see what's going on. Remember, the Apostle Paul has been arrested by the Romans in Jerusalem because he was being beat to death by the Jews. The Jews didn't arrest Paul. They just jumped him and started beating on him with the intent to kill him. That's when the Romans stepped in, and the Romans arrested him. And this guy, Lysias, who was the head of the Roman cohort there in Jerusalem, took Paul in and had him arrested, and then brought him before the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin got into chaos. And so Lysias went ahead and sent Paul to a man named Felix, who was the governor of the area, appointed by Rome. And so they took him to Caesarea, and he is now in Caesarea awaiting trial, this is the trial there before Felix. Felix is hearing his case. The Jews came from Jerusalem, and they hired a lawyer to argue their case. So let's just read and see what happens. We'll read the whole chapter and maybe make some comments on the way through. It says, and after 5 days, the high priest, Ananias, came down with some elders and a spokesman, one Tertullus. They laid before the governor their case against Paul, and when he had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, since through you we enjoy much peace, and since by your foresight, most excellent Felix, reforms are being made for this nation. By the way, this is all a load of manure here that he's throwing out. Is it okay to say manure from the pulpit? No. He is slinging it. And what he's saying, none of this is true, by the way. He's not just trying to flatter him. He's actually lying. There wasn't peace under Felix, and reforms were not being made. Anyway, he goes on and says, in every way and in everywhere, we accept this with all gratitude. And the Jews never accepted Roman rule with any gratitude. So just understand he's doing this. Really, this is actually typical Roman way of doing things, but certainly not the truth. He says, but to detain you no further, I beg you in your kindness to hear us briefly, for we have found this man a plague, literally a pest, or a pestilence. is the one who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. He even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. It's like, wait a minute, who seized him? Anyway, but we seized him. we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to find out from him about everything of which we accuse him. And the Jews also joined in the charge, affirming that all these things were so. And when the governor had nodded to him to speak, Paul replies. And notice Paul's demeanor before Felix. It's respectful but honest. He says, knowing that for many years you have been a judge over this nation, I cheerfully make my defense. You can verify that it is not more than 12 days since I went up to do worship in Jerusalem. And they did not find me disputing with anyone or stirring up a crowd, either in the temple or in the synagogue or in the city. Neither can they prove to you that they now what they now bring up against me. But this I confess to you, that according to the way which they call a sect, I worship the God of our fathers, believing everything laid down by the law and written in the prophets, having a hope in God, which these men themselves accept, that there will be a resurrection of both the just and the unjust. So I also take pains to have a clear conscience toward both God and man. Now, after several years, I came to bring alms to my nation and to present offerings. While I was doing this, they found me purified in the temple without any crowd or tumult. But some Jews from Asia, they ought to be here before you to make an accusation, should they have anything against me. Or else let these men themselves say what wrongdoing they found when I stood before their council, other than this one thing, that I cried out while standing among them, it is with respect to the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you this day. But Felix, having a rather accurate knowledge of the way, put them off, saying, when Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case. And he gave orders to the centurion that he should be kept in custody, but have some liberty, and that none of his friends should be prevented from attending to his needs. And after some days, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, and he sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Jesus Christ. And as he reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment, Felix was alarmed and said, go away for the present. When I get an opportunity, I will summon you. At some time, he hoped that money would be given to him by Paul. So he sent for him often and conversed with him. And when 2 years had elapsed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. And desiring to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul in prison. And so this whole chapter is really Paul's defense before Felix. I think we see two things here. One, Paul resisted the urge to try to offer Felix any money to get out of jail. And I think Felix would have taken it. I think if he really, because that's kind of how the Roman system worked. I mean, Felix was a corrupt leader. And so that's kind of how it worked. If Paul had just offered him some money to get out, Felix would have probably taken it and let him out. He could have gone free. And I just wonder how many of Paul's friends and people that had come in to see him saying, Paul, we've got some money collected. Let's just give it to him. Let's get out of here. Think of the good you can do. And Apostle Paul wouldn't do it. All he did was present him with Christ and him crucified. And talked about righteousness and the coming judgment. And when he did that, Felix didn't want to do it. So as we look at this section, we want to see the accusation. The accusation is laid before him. Luke introduces this section and Paul's time before Felix. Felix was, he was an interesting ruler. He was Greek by birth, and what they called a freedman. meaning that he was a slave at one time, and he was appointed ruler of the northern thing. So he started out as a slave and kind of worked his way on up. And one of the historical writers said that Felix may have been governor, but he governed with the mind of a slave. So in other words, even though he had this position, he still thought like a slave would think. And I don't think you govern well if you think the way a slave thinks. And so I think he was always suspicious of people, and he was always looking to kind of crawl over people to get to the top. Looking at just a real quick Wikipedia search, I found this. Felix was, because Wikipedia is the authority on all things, right? He says, Felix's cruelty and licentiousness, coupled with his accessibility to bribes, led to a great increase of crime in Judea. Okay, so think about what Tertullus said to him. And now think about this, you know. It says, the period of his rule was marked by internal feuds and disturbances, which he put down with severity. Remember when Lysias came in to the temple to arrest, to break it up and grab Paul, he thought that Paul was that Egyptian guy that had led a great revolt, which actually led to the death of 4,000 Jews. And so, you know, there's this turmoil going on throughout all of Judea with people trying to rise up against the rulers and stuff like that. And so Felix would have no part of it. He would just take care of it right away with force, with severity. I read another place on the, in doing a search. It said this, on returning to Rome in AD 60, Felix was accused of using a dispute between the Jews and the Syrians of Caesarea as a pretext to slay and plunder the inhabitants. But through the intercession of his brother, the freedman Paulus, who had a great influence with the emperor Nero, he escaped unpunished. And so Felix was not a good dude. He wasn't necessarily a great godly leader at all. He was put there, he was appointed by Rome, mostly because of his connection with his brother, with Nero and the Roman rulers. It wasn't because he was hugely qualified. And so as we start this, he starts out, he says, and after 5 days, the high priest. So this is 5 days later from the time Paul arrives in Caesarea. The leaders now come. Ananias came down with some of the elders and a spokesman, this Tertullus. And they are there to give their case against Paul. And Tertullus introduced his introduction here. When he stands before Felix, is almost as long as his accusations. He goes on this great flattering introduction, but it's actually just a pack of lies. And yet, it was the idea was to disarm Felix. See, when someone's flattering you, their purpose of that is to disarm you. You know that? When they flatter you, their purpose is to disarm you. So always be wary of flattery, because they're trying to disarm you to get something from you. And so that's really what he was doing. And so there really wasn't much peace. So we see the accusation of sedition. He makes three accusations against Paul, and amazingly, they all begin with S. I don't know how that is. But he accused him, first of all, of sedition. He says that this guy has gone around and he's the guy that stirs up the Jews, and he stirs up riots among the Jews throughout the world. Now, if you're Felix, you could care less of what he does outside of your region. You want to know, what has he done in my region? And so Tertullus then says, this guy is stirring up the Jews throughout the whole world. And so it doesn't really hold a lot of weight, but it was probably the most serious accusation, because it was against Roman law to start riots. Remember in Philippi, they were worried. You know, the governor, the mayor comes in and says, hey, quit this riot here in Philippi, go home, and hopefully Rome won't hear about this, because it was a big deal. But Paul never started any of the riots. He was the source of them a lot of times. He was a cause of them necessarily, but he didn't start them. They were fighting over him, and then the riots started because they didn't like what he was preaching. but it was not done throughout the whole world. By the way, they didn't prove their case here because they had no eyewitnesses. So we see the accusation of sectarianism. Sectarianism is basically the accusation of heresy. And so now they're moving in from more of a political arena into more of a religious arena. But they're kind of, if you have oval circles, you know, this one would overlap the other one. The first one of sedition is purely political. In other words, he's causing these riots, he's causing these uproars, and that would be a rebellion against Rome. This one here moves into the realm of religion, but why does it overlap into the political? Because in the Roman world, you were not allowed to start a new religion. It was illegal to start a new religion. And so it was, they're accusing him of starting a new religion. You know, and this is already weighed in on earlier, you know, I think in Acts 22 when he stood before one of the other leaders. But this was an accusation of heresy. The word sect there that he uses in verse 5, I think it is, and he's a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. The word sect there literally is the word heresy. By calling Paul the ringleader, or by calling what he's teaching a sect, Tertullus is trying to divorce what Paul is teaching from Judaism. He wants to say, this is not part of Judaism. He is starting his own new thing here. And so he's trying to divorce the two. And Paul's going to point out later that you can't divorce the two. And we're going to look at that too. And so we see the accusation of heresy or sedition, or sectarianism and sedition. And then the third accusation is sacrilege. In other words, that he brought someone into the, he profaned the temple. And this would hold very little weight with Felix because he could care less what happens in the temple. You know, it doesn't matter to him at all. But he does understand that the Romans allowed the Jews to take anybody who was not a Jew that ended up in the temple, they were allowed to kill them, even if they were Roman citizens. And so there was some rules about this. And so he accuses him here of sacrilege. Notice he said, we were the ones that arrested him, but the reality is they didn't arrest him. He said he even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. No, they didn't. Well, I guess they did. When you think about it, when they grabbed him and started beating him, I guess that's seizing him. But not in the sense that he's using it. He's saying, we arrested him and plan to put him on trial ourselves. But then he says, basically, Lysias stepped in, and Lysias arrested him and basically disrupted us. You see, what happens, we have here in Acts 24, now my version excludes a couple. If you're reading along, if you're in the NAS, you're going, wait a minute, he missed a verse. Well, this is it. It's the end of verse 6, and all of verse 7. And it's the stuff there in the brackets. It says, and he even tried to desecrate the temple, and we arrested him. Now, this is the part that is in or is not in some of the ancient manuscripts. It says, we wanted to judge him according to our own law. But Lysias, the commander, came along and with much violence took him out of our hands, ordering his accusers to come before you. Now, is that really how it went down? It's really not how it went down. Lysias had already wrote a letter explaining what happened and accurately. He goes on to say, by examining him yourself concerning all these matters, you will be able to ascertain the things of which we accuse him. You see, if you don't have verse 7, verse 8 makes very little sense. Because it seems like it ends abruptly. It seems like it breaks what's going on. So in verse 6 it says, you know, he says, he even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. And then he says, by examining him yourself, you'll be able to find out. So by the way it is, without verse 7, it seems like he's asking Felix to examine Paul. By examining Paul, you'll find out. But if you put verse 7 in there, it's pretty clear he's telling him to examine Lysias. By examining Lysias, you'll be able to ascertain, you know, what's going on here, what the truth is. And so that also makes sense as to why later on Felix didn't give a verdict, but said, we'll wait to hear Lysias. And so I think verse 7 should be in there. And so, but it's omitted from some of the older manuscripts, and so it's not there in the ESV. But it is there in the NASB and probably the NIV, and I don't know the other versions, but it's probably there in the Message as well. But anyway, I'm just kidding. So we see Paul's defense. I'm sorry, I didn't click all the way through. So we see Paul's defense now. He's been standing there listening to all this, and then, you know, the other Jews stood in, they threw in their thing, and then the governor nods to him, and Paul then replies. Notice his introduction, though. He says, listen, knowing that for many years you have been judge over the nation, I cheerfully make my defense. Did he flower him? Did he build him up? Did he say anything that was untrue? No. He says, knowing that you've been a ruler now for many years, Felix took office in AD 52. More than likely, it's AD 58, so it's been 6 years that he's been in office. So it falls within the many category. He's not trying to flower him. We see the timeline of his defense, or the timeline doesn't allow for sedition. So he's going to hit every one of these charges. The first one he dismisses by the fact that the timeline doesn't allow him to do this. He said, I've only been here 12 days. Okay, so 5 days he's been in custody in Caesarea. 7 days he was doing the purification. He said, I've only been in here 12 days. I haven't had time to even get into an argument with anybody in the temple or an argument with anybody in the synagogue or anything. I've only been here 12 days, and that could be verified. And so the timeline doesn't allow for it. And then we see Paul's theology is not heresy. Notice he says here in verse 13, he says, neither can they prove to you what they now bring up against me. But this I confess to you, that according to the way, which they call a sect, I worship the God of our fathers, believing everything laid down by the law, and written in the prophets. So by Paul saying this, he's now making connections with Judaism to the way, or what we now call Christianity. Right? He's making a connection with Judaism. He's saying, listen, I believe everything laid down in the law and in the prophets. I believe all of the Old Testament. And I think he would go on to say, and all of it points to Christ. Right? And so the reality is, if you are a Christian, you are going to subscribe to the truths in the Old Testament, which was at the time Judaism, which was accepted by the Romans. And so Paul then, even though Tertullus was trying to divorce Judaism from Christianity, Paul is marrying them again, saying we couldn't have Christianity without Judaism first, because our Messiah came from the Jews. He is a Jew. And so he's building the bridge again between Judaism through the law and the prophets to Christianity. And by the way, if you truly study the law and the prophets, you will end up with Christ as the Messiah, with Jesus as the Messiah. It's undeniable. And so Paul's building that bridge here. And so we see his theology. It's not heresy that he believes all the law and the prophets. Now, why did he put the law and the prophets? Because the Sanhedrin, made up mostly of Sadducees, only accepted the first five books. They didn't accept the prophets. They didn't accept the Psalms. They didn't accept those. And so Paul's like, I believe all of it, which put him in the group of the Pharisees. And so I thought it was a great, brilliant way of tying in the Judaism with Christianity. So we see Paul's theology is not heresy. And we see Paul's true mission. Why did he come to Jerusalem? Well, he says in verse 17, he gives two reasons. Now, after several years, I came to bring alms to my nation and to present offerings. So he came for two reasons. He said, I came to bring alms. In other words, I had these alms that I collected, this offering that I, this money I collected, I came to bring them to my nation. You know, we know that he came to bring them to the Christians there in Jerusalem. And that's why he came. And he came to present offerings. And that's what they found him doing in the temple when they arrested him. And so we see those two parts. And then we see really Paul's own testimony in verse 20 and 21. He says, or else let these men, themselves say what wrongdoing they found when I stood before the council. Other than this one thing, and he said, this is what they found wrong, and that is, it is with that he cried out in front of them, it is respect to the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you this day. And so Paul then says his own testimony has it so that because he believes in the resurrection of the dead that he is on trial. And that his own testimony says, maybe that's why I'm standing here before you, is because I cried out of this. And so as we look at this, you know, Felix is he's got to give a verdict. And so we look at the verdict. And the verdict is such that he's really caught between a rock and a hard place. I want you to put yourself in the place of Felix at that time. Of course, you have to devoid yourself of any kind of love for the Lord or anything like that, or any understanding of events that happened since then. But you look at it, he was really caught between a rock and a hard place because he wasn't a very godly leader. Well, he wasn't a godly leader at all. And yet, Paul was a Roman citizen, which carries a lot of weight. And he was accused of these crimes. However, the prosecution really failed to bring their case very, very strong against him. They didn't bring any good witnesses. They didn't bring anything that would actually convict him of any crime. So the prosecution failed to actually make their case. And there stands before him a Roman citizen with full rights as a Roman citizen. The Jewish court had failed to convict Paul of anything. It just ended up in a fight, a brouhaha, right? And so Felix was, and he understood. He was familiar with the way. He understood a lot of the Jewish law because he was married to a Jewish woman. And so he understood this. He knew that the way people, the people of the way movement or Christians at that time were not political revolutionists. He knew that. He knew that they had no political aspirations. And so Felix is really caught between a rock and a hard place here. He doesn't know what to do. The hard place, by the way, is if he let Paul go, he would face the wrath of the Jewish leaders. And his kingdom, his ruling area, was already kind of filled with little uprisings here and there against Rome. And he's thinking, if I lose these Jewish rulers, maybe they would lead all the Jews to revolt against my rulership and Rome in general. And so he's really caught between a rock and a hard place, and he has no moral framework in order to choose. So what does he do? He defers. Isn't that typical? He doesn't make a decision. He decides not to decide. And so he keeps Paul in. But notice the opportunities the Apostle Paul has had through this. He gets before Felix time and time again. It says, after some days, Felix came with his wife, Drusilla, who was Jewish. By the way, Drusilla was his third wife that he lured away, seduced away from her first husband. And she was 16 at the time that he did that. And so, but she was a Jewish woman, and he through her, he could understand the Jewish laws and everything like that. And he knew the way. He knew about the way. And he sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. And he reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment. And so here you have Felix with his wife bringing Paul in and having dialogue back and forth. And Paul sharing Christ with him and then sharing with him about righteousness and about the coming judgment. So when he heard about this, when Felix heard about this, he was alarmed. He was alarmed and said, go away. I don't want to hear about this anymore. But then after a while, he'd bring him back, you know, and say, let's talk about this again. What are some of this Jesus stuff? You know, what's going on? And so he was curious. And so what happens is through his 2 years, Paul had many opportunities to stand before Felix and his wife, Drusilla. But after 2 years, Felix was replaced. He was sent to Rome to stand really trial there in Rome and was really only let out because, or let off the hook because of his brother's relationship with Nero. But because he didn't want to, he that at that time needed political favors, he left Paul in custody, in prison there, and that's really where the story ends. So I look at this section and I see two things. I see the Apostle Paul resisting the opportunity to offer a bribe and get free and think of all the good things. Maybe he could then go on to Rome, a free man, and then on to Spain, and think of how many people he could lead to Christ. Still doesn't justify the wrong. And he knew it, so he resisted. But I also see this guy Felix, one of the best teachers that have ever been, I think second to Christ, stands before him and presents Christ to him, and he still responds. He still rejects him. So you know what that gives me hope? Because if the Apostle Paul is standing before Felix and he's laying out Christ and he's having this great conversation and Felix doesn't come to Christ, is that the Apostle Paul's fault? Did he just not present it right? Did he just not know enough? No. You see, doesn't that give us hope too? Because many times we share the gospel and people reject it, and what do we think? Well, I must have blown it. I must not have said things right. And let me tell you something, that's a lie from the pit of hell. Because there are a lot of people who rejected Christ's teaching. A lot of people who rejected Christ himself walked away. So Felix, I think, blew it. I think he may have had a great opportunity, but he blew it. Any questions on this section, on this trial? It's a pretty straightforward trial. I love to get into the cultural aspects and kind of get into those little nuances because it does actually help us understand it better. No questions? Sweet. I do want to make one announcement. A couple weeks ago, Maggie had asked us if we believed in anointing someone with oil and praying over them. And I told her, yes, we do. And that we would do that sometime because she asked. And we're going to do that right after church. If anybody wants to be a part of that, they can. And so me and Jerry and Pat are going to get together with her. And we're inviting anyone else who wants to be a part of that to join us to anoint her with oil and pray over her. The passage that we get this from is in James chapter 5. And it doesn't mean that they're guaranteed she's going to be healed. We're not trying to manipulate God. We're not going to say, okay, God, we jumped through this hoop. Now you have to do this. That's not the way God works. Okay? God is sovereign. He is Lord. He is master. He doesn't answer to us. And so we don't demand that God heal her. We plead that he does. And we anoint with oil because it is a symbol of the Holy Spirit. And that's what the scriptures tell us to do. The scriptures tell us if anybody's sick, and let them come before the elders, and we'll anoint them with oil and pray. And so that's what we're going to do. So if you want to hang around and be a part of that, feel free to do that. But we'll do that after the service. Let's pray together.